solar panel and windmill, we need to come together sometimes and show our strength so that the Trump administration at its 100th day is under no illusions that people are somehow in a fog. We know absolutely what this guy is doing, and boy, are we pissed off about it.
Bill McKibben, I want to thank you for being with us, co-founder of 350.org. And that does it for our broadcast. We'll be out on Saturday broadcasting 5 hours from the People's Climate March starting at 10 Eastern Standard Time. On Saturday night, I'll be speaking at Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ, and on Sunday at Busboys and Poets. Then it's on to Durham, North Carolina. On Monday night, I'll be speaking at the Eno River Unitarian Church at 7. On Tuesday, 6:30, I'll be speaking at Coral Gables Congregational Church in Miami. On Wednesday at 7:30 in United Methodist Church in Tampa and beyond. Check our website, democracynow.org. Thanks so much.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. I call it the new WHFR Journal because it's not the same as last week. I'm your host, Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. All kinds of things happening in and around Dearborn. And we're here to give you not only the headline news from a number of sources, not just the newspapers, but also maybe a little depth, a little background, and sometimes opinions, and in this case, myself and some that are printed up that have been published around the area here. We just want to say that all opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, or students. All right. Well, the big story, which actually came out last week, and you say, well, why didn't you mention it? You're at Henry Ford College. Your president is retiring. That's right. I was going to use it last week. That's because I misread the story, and I thought he was retiring this June. But it's actually June 30th, 2018. So it's not exactly crisis news. And there is no crisis here at Henry Ford College that I know of at this point. You know, when the last president left us, we discovered, about $16 million in debt. That apparently the president and her financial officer knew about, but nobody told anybody. And so, surprise, new president. I don't think there's going to be any surprises of that magnitude anyway for the new president. And it will take a while to choose a new president, and it's good that we have this advanced lead because presidents usually don't switch institutions at the last minute, even if there seems to be a good offer. They usually make a decision, well, we'll start a search maybe this fall, and maybe a year from fall, we'll apply a few places and we'll see what happens. And so that's what's going to happen here. There will be continuity. There's no problem. No, we don't have a vice president that will take over. Probably not necessary because we think there's plenty of time that when Dr. Jensen retires as president of Henry Ford College on June 30th, 2018, that's at the end of the fiscal year, which is on the half year for whatever reasons most schools are, that we'll have a new president just jumping right in to take over. It's a very important thing. I've been here long enough at the college, almost five decades now, to have seen, I think, four different presidents and then one acting president on top of that. And it was interesting to see the different approaches of each person. It really did change the college, I think, a great deal between from one president to the next. So it does make a great difference. A lot of the initiatives that were started by Dr. Jensen seem to be effective, certainly in terms of budgetary matters. We're all caught up and we're putting a little bit of money each year away for the required reserve. So in bad economic times or a downturn in enrollment, which sometimes happens in a full employment situation, kind of interesting, when people are fully employed, I guess they don't need community college education as much for some reason. And although my personal opinion is, and here we go, look out, is that everyone needs to keep their skills upgraded and be looking for the next best job. And certainly community colleges are known for having all kinds of programs and helping with retraining as well as personal enrichment too. Sometimes not just retraining in a different area in some cases. And that is, again, something that community colleges can do uniquely well, because four-year schools usually have to, it takes longer for them to develop their curriculums and make changes in their curriculums. Plus, we offer the two-year degree programs and the 1 or 2 year certificate programs that are specifically tailored to jobs, and four-year schools, for the most part, don't have that focus. And that's okay. That's fine, of course. All right. Well, had a frog in my throat there, and there aren't many frogs left in the world, but there's one in my throat, I think. So excuse me as I grab some water here. Good old water. At least we're not drinking Flint water. No. Okay. So good luck to you, President Jensen, but you're not going to be leaving us for another 13 months. So there you go. Just didn't want anybody to think that he missed the top story of the week. No. I did have a guest here for the sake of Earth Day celebration, which was actually last Saturday, but we had Dave Norwood here last Friday on the 21st. Today is the 28th of April. And he's the sustainability coordinator for the city of Dearborn. So we talked about a variety of projects in the city to help keep the place green and to keep power uses down and to keep us all healthy. And so we didn't get to all of the smaller stories. I just wanted to mention briefly. So looking way back at the Dearborn Press and Guide from Sunday, April 16th, the Dearborn High School was in mourning at that point anyway. Because the loss of a teen in a spring break drinking death. It was an alcohol-related spring break accident has left students and staff at Dearborn High School in mourning. I won't mention the student's name, but he was on a trip to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which is one of the big spring break escape places, has been for decades and decades. There were some Hollywood movies made that showed a pretty wild scene there, if you trust any Hollywood movie to show to be documentary-like. But what was happening, he became, this teen from Dearborn High School became highly intoxicated and belligerent, and his friends tried to convince him to go to bed, but later found him unconscious and began performing CPR. At about 4 a.m., one of the teens called 911, and a parent staying two houses down rushed to the house. And the student was unresponsive when officers arrived, and one of his friends was performing CPR. So I just, I have to ask these questions. He was an underage minor. There was an abundance of alcohol in the house. So breaking the law there, of course. And then three of the teenagers, in fact, that they found in the house that possessed false IDs, so they've been drinking throughout the evening. But the students' friends and their parents and other community members held a candlelight vigil for him at Dearborn High School. So it's a very regrettable and tragic loss. It doesn't say in here, and I'm not trying to besmirch his image, but it seemed like a bad thing to do to allow an underage minor to spend any time unsupervised by adults in Fort Lauderdale, Florida during spring break time. That just seems a general bad idea. But people make bad decisions. Or maybe the student made some of the decisions himself, too. I think there has to be a better education program going on in the schools about the dangers of alcohol. among other dangers, many other dangers. If the parents don't give that sort of lecture, then perhaps, it has to fall on the schools. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, what have you. And you say, well, that's a parent thing to do. Well, somehow the message didn't get through. There's nothing wrong with reinforcing the basics of healthy behavior, sensible behavior. You don't have to be sensible all the time. Some people think sensible is boring and dull. But you have to be careful all the time, to one extent or the other. And that's just another instance of the parenting communication, whoever's responsible for parenting, not just the parents, but society in general, as well as the schools. It didn't happen. But then sometimes people forget or don't want to believe. It's tragic. It is. Any loss diminishes me, I used to say, but there seems to be so many people losing their lives. Why am I paying more attention to that towards the end of my life here? But there's not much left to diminish after so many tragic deaths. But we can still mourn, and we can still try to talk about answers to prevent real mistakes from happening in the future. Okay, I'm sorry, just had to say a few words about that. Dearborn Fire Department, this is from the Pressing Guide, Wednesday, April 19th, is going to increase its ranks by 12. It'll add 12 firefighters to the ranks to meet a rising demand for service. City Council recently approved the staffing increase by authorizing a $200,000 appropriation from the general fund balance. It comes on the heels of an increased demand for emergency medical services and a new mandate to assign 3 firefighters to ladder trucks. And the staffing boost will increase the department from 128 to 140 firefighters for the remainder of 2017 fiscal year. And this will also be included in the fiscal year 2018 budget request, which hasn't been approved yet, but will be not too long. Seems to be a good idea. Councilman Michael Cerini said the move puts the department in line with national standards and enables the city to better answer all 9/11 calls coming in from its residents. Okay. Just that makes you feel better. Okay. I'm not sure I mentioned this. I thought I did. But the Dearborn Public Schools did agree to honor Russ Gibb, former media teacher at Dearborn High School. And they've renamed the studio, which is rooms A1 and A3. I suspect one is the TV studio floor and the other is control room classroom. I haven't been there, I'm sorry to say. But that facility will be renamed from now on the Russ Gibb Digital Media and Television Production Center. That's almost a big enough name that it'll stretch right across 2 rooms, depending on what font size Russ would like. And he should have a decent font size. I do think so. I think that's very appropriate. And congratulations to him. There's going to be, at some point in the future, sort of a dedication or an honoring of him when they put the plaque up. And they're hoping that'll be sometime in the future. It might be during the film festival that the media students at Dearborn High School, under Kirk Doley's direction, since Russ retired, they're doing and I think I have the story somewhere here. I'll go over the details later. I think it's tonight and tomorrow night at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center here in Dearborn. They'll be presenting short films by the students, and they indicated in some story that maybe if Russ is able to get up and about, they will honor him either tonight or tomorrow night as part of that, otherwise some other time in the future. But that's a nice honor. Just a name on a wall, but still. And let's see what else we got here. Okay. Somewhat more recent newspapers. All right, we're getting more recent. Last Sunday, April 23rd, in the Press and Guide. Let's see if there's anything there. Yeah, there's a personal interest story. Normally I don't do that, but it's a little bit of an extended obituary, in fact, and a tribute to Harold Thomason. Now, I've lived in Dearborn since 1979, and every summer, pretty much for 5-6 months a year, in mostly good weather, sometimes in cloudy weather, a little bit cloudy weather, there was a person, it was Harold Thomason, who was out along Michigan Avenue with his powerful stargazing equipment. And for a little bit of contributions, which he gave to community causes, he allowed people to look at the stars. And he would advise them about astronomy and how to maybe build telescopes for themselves. And he was just, as it says at the conclusion of the article, nice job by Andrea Blum, by the way, he was a solitary doer. He loved being out there on his own. He did it for about 25 years, usually outside the Dearborn Police Department, Henry Ford Centennial Library, or other spots along Michigan Avenue. You know, people just see him there, and he'd be sitting there in his chair and just waiting for people to stop, park somewhere nearby, and then he would take a little bit of money and so on. He was 77 years old, by the way. They have a little color photo that they put in there in the article. So we'll miss you, Harold Thomason. Astronomy, looking at the stars, deeply rooted in our culture and our societies, by the way, and an understanding of all the world around us, including the extended world, the universe, is something that people should be contemplating all the time and exploring, however that's possible. So we'll miss you. Harold Thomason was his name. And let's see, anything else in that edition? This is the new WHFR Journal, the only local news radio show where you can hear the pages turning on the air. Yeah. Guys were too lazy to type it out on separate pieces. Let's see, April 30th, here's an event coming up. It's a lecture by social justice advocate Rashida Tlaib, perhaps. It's T-L-A-I-B. She was, of course, a Michigan State representative for 3 terms from this area, and was the first female Muslim elected to the Michigan legislature and the second elected in the whole country. And she's going to be doing a lecture about the current state of politics. Whoa, there's a lot to talk about. On April 30th, that's Sunday. And it's going to be sponsored by the Dearborn chapter of Forward Action Michigan. And let's see where it's going to be. It's a free event, first of all. It's set for 7 p.m. this Sunday, April 30th, at Christ Episcopal Church. That's 120 North Military in Dearborn. And Forward Action Michigan Dearborn is a collaborative group to facilitate communication and progressive action in Dearborn. I hope it's progressive. I think progressive action, I know there's other kinds of actions like regressive, but I don't, if there's action, you almost assume it has to be progressive. So it's almost what they call an oxymoron to say progressive action. But any other kind of action than progressive is going to be undoing things, right? Regressive action undoes things, tears them down. How can you go below non-action? Well, anyway, there needs to be a lot of positive action and a lot of changes in our society. Always true. Doesn't matter who's president, but it's always true. Okay, well, I'm reaching now for something here. All right. Last Wednesday, two days ago, I had the pleasure to be the MC, and that was a lot of fun, at the Mayor's Art Awards here in Dearborn, honoring the creative community. And admission was free, and there was appetizers. And you might say, why didn't you mention this last week? I know. But just so you know, the Arts Educator Award, which I'm especially proud of, not just because, yes, I won last year, but So many of my colleagues here at Henry Ford College deservedly have won that. Sometimes people say, well, teachers are those who can't do the real thing, so they just talk about it. Those who can't do teach or something. That's crazy. We can inspire, we can motivate, we can direct, advise, supervise in some cases. And I've been extremely proud of being a part of that in the telecommunication area, where there has to be a lot of creativity, or we'll all get very bored. Since we use telecommunication, radio, TV, all electronic media, including texting and so on, so much. It's not just sometimes, it's like hours and hours a day. And if we don't have responsible and creative people, then it hurts all of us. You know, nothing's going to happen. But anyway, the Arts Educator Award for this year here in Dearborn went to Sue Domain. And the Volunteer Award went to Bruce Harkness, story about him coming up. And the Artist Performer Award went to Dave Gordon. The Mayor's Award, which is a special award, went to the Glass Academy in Dearborn. Arts Patron Award went to Green Brain Comics. That's well-deserved. Dan Merritt and his wife Katie have been very instrumental in helping the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority and having all kinds of activities, free activities that bring people in. For example, we can say, because it is free, that a week from tomorrow, that's May the 6th, is Free Comic Book Day at Green Brain Comics and other comic stores too, by the way. But Green Brain is right here in Dearborn on Michigan Avenue in East Downtown Dearborn. And it'll be from 10 in the morning to 6 p.m. at night. But they've had a lot of other things. It was actually Dan and Katie that came up with the idea of the comic book music, comic book cartoon, superhero music that was done at the Dearborn Symphony Pops concert last month. Yeah. Jessica Carreras won the DCAC Bravo Award. That's the Dearborn Community Arts Council Bravo Award. Bravo put up the money, I guess, for the plaque or something. Or maybe they're just saying, Bravo! And she has been a talented writer and media developer for several organizations in Dearborn, including helping a couple years ago until she got her current job, which I can't remember where that is, but she was with the city of Dearborn, helping them first get set up with their website. Special Recognition Award went to Robert Curtis. The Arts Organization Award went to Players Guild of Dearborn. 70 years, community plays, all an independent organization, not directly affiliated with the city, but benefiting all of us. And we have a new play coming up in May, which maybe you should consider attending if you haven't been to the Players Guild before. It's great, high quality, local theater. The play is Sugar, I understand. Sugar. That should be sweet.
Bad joke. All right.
And let's see what else we have here. Dearborn Times Herald from this Wednesday. Oh, my goodness. The sad story is the former Dearborn City Clerk Kathleen Buda has waived her preliminary exam in the 19th District Court. The case was bound over to Wayne County Circuit Court. Again, she was arraigned on 7 felony counts of embezzlement and common law offenses on February 9th of this year. Judge Mark Summers read the charges, and then it's now going to Wayne County Circuit Court. Summers ordered Buda to surrender her passport and was given a $50,000 personal bond. Each count of the 7 comes with a maximum of 5 years in jail. That could be 35 years total, or $10,000 fine for each, which would be $70,000. So we'll see how that works out. And you might say, well, you can't decide before, you know, somebody adjudicates it, and it's true, until she has fully her day in court, And that there is finally a ruling by a judge and or a jury. She's not necessarily guilty. Okay. But the story does go on to indicate the kind of evidence. And I have to say that it's pretty complete from just reading it in the story. I mean, if I was in the jury, I'd probably ask a whole bunch of other questions to make a fair and unbiased decision. I have no grudges against Kathleen Buda. It's mentioned here in the story that, first of all, the amounts that she took, if she did take them, were relatively small amounts each time, but then she was covering it up and lying and so on. And someone suggested, again, allegedly, that she was gambling. Lottery tickets, something like that. And, you know, when you get into, and I'm not saying this is a situation for her at all, but I understand, because I'm not a gambler myself. I'm just totally against it in general. But once you start losing, you feel you've got to double down, as they say, I guess, or, you know, put a lot more money in there in order to make everything to catch up on what you've lost. And so, again, the odds are always against you. The odds are always against you when you're gambling. Just remember that, folks. It's never a sure thing. I know some people say, well, you know, got to win sometime. No, you don't have to win sometime. You know, the odds are always against you every time you play any sort of gambling kind of game. Okay? The odds are always against you, which means, well, whether you want to call it a string or bad luck, it's just the statistics. The numbers are always against you. Yes, there can be a random fluke of the odds, but usually you're never going to catch up. Okay. I do have some friends, a couple friends, distant friends, who go to Vegas, Las Vegas, and they gamble for entertainment. It's fun, they think. They are prepared to lose money for the thrill of thinking they might win money. I can't figure that. I can't. But nonetheless, you know, as long as you know what you're doing, it's okay. It's all right. As long as you know what you can afford to lose and know that the odds are always against you and that if you lose, you can never catch up. I know. Terrible. Terrible to say that. But all right. We're looking at the last paper. Then I'll go to some newer stories even here on New WHFR Journal. Friday, April 28th, 2017. We are the station making waves, WHFR.FM. Remember, all these shows are being podcast, too, immediately after broadcast and staying there for, months, year. So if you want to catch up on anything, you can do that. And as long as I brought that up, I'll just remind you of a few special shows that we did that you can still listen to. On the 17th of February this year, 2/17/17, the podcast for the WHFR Journal is the State of the City presentations, the audio portion of the five videos that Mayor O'Reilly did. And it's, even without the pictures, it's completely understandable. And so that they're all there in one fell swoop, back to back on that particular show. It takes 50 minutes of the show. And then, to explain some of the things that he said and to answer some more questions from me, on March 24th, 3/24/17, Mayor O'Reilly came in the studio for a full hour. And we talked about all kinds of things, including some more specifics about things that he said in his State of the City address. Okay, and let's see here. And of course, last week, 4/21/17, Dave Norwood was here. To talk about sustainability issues and the state of energy and health and so on in Dearborn. That's an interesting half hour if you want to go back to that. Okay. Our representative from this area to the state of Michigan, to the House of Representatives in Lansing, is Abdallah Hamoud. And he did have to speak up because a female Representative, a Republican, Michelle Hoitenga. That's an I. I guess it is. Yes. Hoitenga. She is a representative from Republican district that I don't know where that is. Anyway, she introduced a bill almost immediately after news broke that a young girl was mutilated. Her genitals were mutilated. Actually, it was two young girls from Minnesota who had come to Detroit, and a doctor here. And it's not clear to me, they didn't read the story closely, whether the doctor did it without consulting the parents or assumed the parents were in favor of this, since it's a cultural thing in certain Middle Eastern countries to do this kind of operation. It's totally illegal in the state of Michigan. Well, anyway, the bill that Representative Michelle Hoitenga, Republican, from Manton, Michigan. Everybody knows where Manton is, right? Not me. Okay. If you've not heard by now, a doctor in Detroit, she said, is being charged with operating an underground clinic that's actively engaged in genital mutilation on young girls, essentially practicing a fundamentalist version of Sharia law, or Sharia law, if you will. And she said that in an email to colleagues to garner support for the legislation. I have a bill on my desk this week that would prohibit the practice of foreign laws, including Sharia law. I believe we must send a message to these practices shall not be tolerated in the state of Michigan. Well, in the email, she doesn't specifically use the term Sharia law, but states that no other country's laws can be practiced in Michigan. Okay, seven other states, believe it or not, in the United States of America, North Carolina, Alabama, Arizona, Kansas, Louisiana, South Dakota, and Tennessee, recently have passed similar rule of law, as it's called, legislation. But Abdallah Hamoud, who is Muslim, and fellow state representative Jeremy Moss, Democrat Southfield, who is Jewish, say the bill would have widespread consequences if passed into law, including outlawing Catholic annulments, Jewish prices, that's circumcision of male infants, by the way. I'd never heard that word before. That's why I can't pronounce it. It looks like brises. And even kosher delis. Now, of course, knowing how enforcement, talk about police enforcement goes, he'd probably let the Catholics and Jews alone and just focus on the Muslims, because that's a current popular thing to do, right? This bill that was proposed does nothing to protect girls from genital mutilation, which is already a crime, as stated by Abdallah. He went on to say there is no need to create another law to outlaw something that's already prohibited. This bill is simply a xenophobic, Islamophobic attack on Michigan's Muslim community, which already abhors the practice of mutilation and does not want to be identified with it. He added that the practice is a cultural custom, not a religious one, and isn't permitted in any version of Sharia law. So there, let's get that straight, okay? The doctor that was charged, Hamoud said, also engaged in cultural practice, not a religious practice. And again, this doctor, who was a woman herself, by the way, I guess, the doctor, she engaged in a practice that is illegal and was therefore charged with committing a crime. And so there's also a federal crime, a 1996 federal crime, making the practice of female genital mutilation a crime punishable by 5 years in prison. And again, in 2013, the Transport for Female Genital Mutilation Act is, you know, going across state lines. There's a question of how does state law apply to that. That also outlawed the so-called vacation cutting, the practice of taking a girl overseas for the procedure. So we've got state law, federal law already against that. So probably don't need any more laws in regard to that. Yes, we need enforcement. But so it's just a political thing. Everybody stand up and say no to Muslims is what it seems to be, although it actually doesn't say that, of course. But I agree with Abdallah Hamoud that it's just catering to the bigots, if I may use that term. Some people don't know what a xenophobe is, so I'll just use a much more colloquial term. Okay, about the Dearborn High School Student Film Festival. Okay. As I said, it's coming up tonight at 7 p.m. and tomorrow night, the Michael A. Guido Theater, the big one, inside the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And doors will be opened at 6:30. Okay. Same day tickets will be sold at the venue for $10 a person. Obviously, proceeds will be going to help the schools and probably specifically the media program, because they get costs. Yes, they do. It costs money to buy the equipment for the students and to even upgrade facilities as needed. And by the way, there's nearly 100 students in 9th through 12th grades that are involved in some aspect of the filming process. And alumni of the program, which has been around since 1981, also provide a lot of support in one way or the other. Short films this time, not feature films, because they wanted to try to produce higher quality individual works rather than the group work that they had done for many years, which was very noble, too. But this is great. I'm sure it'll be very entertaining. So that's the Dearborn High School Student Film Festival tonight and tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Michael Guido Theater inside Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue. Doors open 6:30. Cost is about $10. Is just $10 a person. Okay. Now, well, we talked about education earlier, so let's just do, anyway, one commentary here from Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Public Radio, and he bemoans perhaps the end of public education. Say it ain't so, Jack.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. When I was a child, there was this widespread, quaint notion that children ought to attend the public schools where they lived. Except for a few kids that went to Catholic schools and one who won a scholarship to Cranbrook, everybody did. This was a middle-class to working-class suburban Detroit district, virtually all white, in the era shortly before busing was first considered as a remedy for de facto segregation. There were no very rich people, but some doctors' and lawyers' kids did go to school with the children of shop rats and assembly line workers. There was concern about quality, but, as far as I remember, nobody talked about pulling the kids out and sending them to a better district. Charter schools hadn't been invented. Private schools were not only beyond most people's means, they seemed somehow vaguely unpatriotic, at least to those of us who grew up on a diet of World War II movies, where O'Malley was in school with Rosenberg and D'Annunzio and Lowell, and all four wound up in the same landing craft headed for Okinawa. There was concern about quality, and conscientious mothers lobbied their neighbors to support proposals raising millage rates. Property taxes were the main source of school funding before Proposal A came in 1994, and communities had considerable latitude over what they spent. But if you wanted a public education, and if your parents moved to a different district, you had to change schools. Well, we're in a different world, with a bewildering array of options. Some districts have become nightmares that any parent who can is attempting to flee. They often can escape, since for the last 20 years, Michigan has had a Schools of Choice program, which enables parents in dubious districts to shop for better ones. Not surprisingly, the Grosse Pointe public schools are much in demand. For many years, the five Grosse Pointes refused to participate in Schools of Choice. But times change. Even the Pointes have been hit with budget cuts and significantly declining enrollment. So now the Grosse Pointe Board of Education is considering charging students from outside the district a whopping $13,000 tuition fee. Any student from, say, Detroit who wanted to come there would have to plunk that much down and have a clean school record and at least a 2.0 grade point average. The school board hasn't definitely decided to do this. One member said she thought some parents who live in the district might pull their kids out in protest. Some wonder if it would be legal, not to mention ethical, to charge tuition for public state-supported education. Grosse Pointe hasn't finally decided. But if they do this and it's allowed to stand, it likely will be the end of public education. If Grosse Pointe can charge $13,000, maybe Okemos can get away with charging an $8,000 fee. And if we can get outsiders to pay, why not charge those who live there something too? Anyone too poor to afford to pay the local public school can go to an inferior, unregulated charter in someone's basement. We might ask ourselves if this is the future we really want, or whether it might make more sense to do the right thing and just fix the public schools instead.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
So let's fix what we have. Let's make sure all students have an equal opportunity to all the facilities, all the education, and that their education is, in fact, following the variety of community and state standards that we've developed over the year. You know, I mean, I think that's very important. I'm a true believer in public schools. I went to them myself, and they're falling on hard times now. And why is that? Funding, lack of support. It's not the competition. The competition isn't doing very well either. Say, oh, those charter schools are really good. Yeah. Well, not really, because you understand that the people, the parents that are smart enough and have the transportation to get their kids to a charter school probably have already done a fairly decent job of educating their kids. You know, and these are the better kids. So charter schools have a little advantage if you're going to compare standards, but they still don't have to follow all the standards that the public schools have to follow, my understanding is. And so that's, you know, interesting problem, okay? And we need to work on that. I just got a flyer in the mail. Everyone in Dearborn and Allen Park probably did at their house that Gary Warrenchuk is going to have his 19th annual Senior Citizen Conference. It's going to be Wednesday, May 17th. I just mentioned that now, and I'm actually on the internet as we speak. Oh, am I multitasking or what? And that doesn't help here. Let me try this site. CommissionerGary.com. Oh, my goodness. Nope. Boy, that's old. I don't know where that came from. His last campaign, perhaps. Anyway, the reason I mention it is because, yes, you have to be a resident of Dearborn or Allen Park, which is his commission district, in order to attend this. And there, in past years, there was you had to RSVP. You could not attend at the spur of the moment. Now, this card... Oops. Oh, I see. It's not a card. It's a very well taped together flyer. Okay, here we go. It's all free, but you must register by May 11th. Space may be limited. Okay, you must register. So if you want to come, it's free. Starts at 7:45 in the morning. Coffee and donuts. Not too healthy there, but what the heck. A welcome at 8:45. The program includes a speaker. Murray Feldman of WWJ Radio 950. He's a news business reporter. And there'll be some other speakers, too, from 9 o'clock to 11:45. So about 2 hours and 45 minutes speech. And then there'll be a lunch. Yep. Who said there's no such thing as a free lunch? There will be a free lunch. If you're registered by May 11th, and of course you have to be a resident of Allen Park or Dearborn. Oh, and you have to turn at least age 60 this year. So you could be 59 and have your birthday later in the year. Got that? So there's those little requirements there. It's just for senior citizens. I did go one year, a couple years ago, and I didn't find it very informative. But for those that don't keep up, you don't, you know, read a lot or look at the other possibilities for themselves, there's a number of vendors and a little bit of socializing going on, you know. So... it's a fine thing to do if you're a senior in Dearborn or Allen Park and would like to go. Again, you have to register by May 11th. And the form that was sent in the mail, if you don't just throw it away and you actually open it up, which it does open, you can send back the form to register by mail. You could fax it. Does anybody have a fax anymore? You can email to GWORONCH, but not AK, at WayneCounty.com. And then there's a phone number for Gary Warrenchuk's office, too. That's all on the inside of that flyer that looks like a single card, but in fact, if you tear it open, it gives you the full information about the Senior Citizen Conference on Wednesday, May 17th, sponsored by Gary Warrenchuk, Wayne County Commissioner. Oh, very helpful. Koronik. Well, another top story broke about a week ago, but we didn't talk about it last week, was that the Post Bar is in hot water, to use a metaphor, with the city of Dearborn after continued violence. And here's the story also from Andrea Blum from April 20th. Ongoing brawls and unruly behavior at the Post Bar on Michigan Avenue has led to at least one Dearborn City leader. Well, one is one more than none, calling for the bar's liquor license to be revoked. But owners of the West End Dearborn Bar claim that they're being targeted not for the violence, but because the city wants to sell the property for a redevelopment project in the works by Ford Motor Company. Well, I thought Ford was already starting on that. Do they need more property? Is this contiguous land that would allow them to even expand a little more? I don't know, but I thought everything was a go-ahead already on the Ford project. So they're not holding up the Ford project. That's not the issue, I guess, folks. But there's a suggestion here that they want a little more property. Ford wants a little more property. I don't know. Anyway, another in a string of violent incidents took place a week ago Sunday, at the Post Bar, and it could force the city to take action soon. City Council President Pro Tem Tom Tofelsky said, another weekend, another melee outside of Post Bar. Police reported multiple fights, bottles being thrown, and gunfire shortly after 2 a.m. Emphasis is mine. Not only did the unruly crowd not comply with police officers to disperse, several people actually initiated new fights directly in front of officers. I wonder what their official status is then. But the chaos was such it required every available Dearborn police officer to be sent to the scene, with more backup coming in from Dearborn Heights. I thought, usually don't they have about 13 police cars? I don't know how many are on duty late Saturday night, though. I'd probably just want the people that are on duty that don't call people to get up from their beds. But oh my gosh, that must have been quite a moment. Last weekend was supposed to be the second weekend the police officers were stationed outside the bar after a city council resolution called for the protective measure. But the bar's owners say they can't afford the prohibitive cost, which amounts to more than $14,000 a month. The attorney of the bar, Hugh Davis, said that amount would mean the bar wouldn't make any money no matter what they did. So they're not complying with paying police to do special duty there. But they are complying, by the way, to monitor hours of operation and lower capacity limits. But neglecting to pay for officers violated an agreement the city forged with the bar owners themselves during a March 29th hearing in front of the Nuisance Abatement Board. The hearing was held in response to the number of police runs made to the bar for numerous problems, drunken brawls, destruction of property, and other unruly behavior. And so the agreement has been violated, and there's still problems, as well as a shooting back in April 3rd. So it's not a positive history there. Mary Landro, speaking for the city of Dearborn, said that the city council is working on a date, possibly May 8th, for the bar owners to appear at another noise abatement board hearing. May 10th is the tentative date for the business's hearing before the State Liquor Control Commission regarding its liquor license. And they're meeting with the city attorney. The owners of Post Bar and their lawyer are meeting with the city attorney, Deborah Walling, to take steps to resolve the issue. But they simply say that they just can't pay the $14,000. Why did they agree to it before? That's what I want to know. Anyway, the $60 million renovation of downtown West Dearborn encompasses two blocks over a four-acre area for two mixed-use retail and restaurant buildings, and is part of Ford's 10-year transformation of its Dearborn campus. But I still can't make the connection how they're being like forced out by Ford or something. Landros says the claims are completely unfounded. The city is not targeting the Post Bar, she said. Any concerns the city might have about disruptive activity in and around the Post Bar have nothing to do with the Ford land project. Get that? Nothing. Nothing. I think I got that right. Hey, you want to make a difference in your city? And if your city is Wyandotte, perk up here. I know our signal is not real strong in Wyandotte, but maybe there's some people that'll be listening to the podcast here or reading their paper, the News Herald, which I got this from today on their website, thenewsherald.com. There's an election, May 2nd, Tuesday. You know, Tuesday is usually election days here in the U.S. Okay. And again, I don't understand why they have a May 2nd election date. I don't know how that came about. I thought everything was changed to November, but maybe this is the last one for a while. But the biggest election in the area. Now, there's four cities that have choices to make this coming Tuesday. But this is mainly about Wyandotte. The biggest election is in Wyandotte, where residents hold the power to change the face of city government because all elective positions in the city of Wyandotte are up for grabs. Two safe positions are city clerk, where Lawrence Steck is running unopposed, as well as city treasurer, a position in which Todd Browning finds himself without a challenger. However, for the first time in 12 years, the mayoral race is contested, with Sherry Sotheby-Frick taking on incumbent Joseph Peterson. Sotheby-Frick has served on the city council since 2005, but due to term limits, could not run again for that position. Ooh, they have term limits for the city council down there. We don't have that in Dearborn. Peterson is seeking his third and final term as mayor. Is he term limited too? Maybe. Wyandotte voters have a full slate of city council candidates to choose from. 14 residents are on the ballot. 6 of those will be elected. A lot of names here are listed in the article. So if you're, again, if you just hadn't even thought about it and you live in Wyandotte, oh my gosh, I hope you're registered to vote, because you can't just walk in if you're not registered. But if you're registered already, then yes, you could vote this Tuesday. Better find out who's running and what you think of them. By the way, in Lincoln Park, residents will go to the polls in order to renew a millage that generates about 10% of the school district's annual budget. That's important. Melvindale Northern Allen Park School System. Are hoping residents will, that's strange. So Allen Park doesn't have just one school system, but it's the Melvindale-Northern Allen Park School System. That's a strange combination. Is that a new merger or something? Anyway, they're hoping that residents in that area will renew an 18 mil non-homestead millage for another 10 years. So if you renew that, it'll only be the businesses. Non-homestead means it's the businesses will have to pay that. And they, you know, it's interesting. They don't get to vote on that. Well, they can vote, but their vote is just as a person. So, and it's just a renewal. But necessary to be renewed. Melvindale Northern Allen Park School System. And let's see. So there you go. That's the story there. Okay, what other opinions do we have here? Looking at about 10 minutes before 2, maybe 8 minutes before 2 now, and at 2 o'clock, Highway 61, with your host, Kitty Love, Best in the Blues, until 4 o'clock when we have more Best in the Blues, because there's so much good blues that comes in from local artists and independent regional artists, and there's always new stuff. And we love playing it for you. And that will be coming in, that will be starting at 2 o'clock. And actually, from 4 to 6, it'll be Mike Holloway and his show of the blues. Go with the Flow, it's called. And that flows from 4 o'clock till 6 p.m. tonight on WHFR's station, Making Waves. Okay, so let's see what else I have here. Alrighty. Real quick, I mentioned the name earlier because he won a Mayor's Arts Award, one of the arts awards given out 2 days ago, Bruce Harkness. He was the City of Dearborn's photographer from 1990 to 2010, and he's got a special presentation coming up this coming Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. It's entitled... At the Dearborn Historical Museum, too. It's entitled 8 Decades of Photography from the City of Dearborn Archives. That's located at the McFadden Ross House, by the way, that archive. So photographs and discussion will spotlight Dearborn City Hall from its origins as the Springwells Municipal Building in the 1920s to its recent transformation to the City Hall Art Space Lofts. Historical Museum Director Jack Tate says Bruce is an award-winning photographer. His shows are always extremely well-attended. Admission is free, but of course, Historical Museum in Dearborn, not fully funded by the city. So donations are accepted, gratefully accepted, if you want to make a donation there. And from the very humble acceptance speech that I heard Bruce give at the Arts Awards, he has quite an interesting wit, sense of humor, and I think it'd be very entertaining. He is known for capturing everyday life in urban neighborhoods in Detroit, Dearborn, and Hamtramck. Many different things that he's been involved in. He even has a Master's of Fine Arts in Photography from Wayne State University. So 30 years of his work. Boy, they sure need a good photographer at a couple of these local papers. Of course, they won't pay anything, Bruce, but just saying. If you're looking to keep busy. Okay. City of Dearborn did send out an email. It's also on their website, too. One of the stories of this week is that they're letting you know there's all kinds of information and help that you can get from the city of Dearborn. Of course, the direct phone line why not call the Department of Public Information? That's Mary Landrosh and others. If you need to find out about these things, the Department of Public Information here in Dearborn is 313-943-2285. But in this little article, they list, they can get you in touch with, if you have a problem with abandoned vehicles in the street, problems with trees in the city, animal control for deceased animals or other animal issues, neighborhood services, pest control or rodent issues. Yeah, I called them about a raccoon in the roof of of my house. And, they said, well, can't do anything about it. You just have to call one of the commercial services. Oh, thank you very much. They didn't even have a reference number. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean that they can't help with other things other than raccoons. I'm sure they can be very helpful with things other than raccoons. Raccoons can be very dangerous, and they're big, and they're smart. It's always dangerous when something's smart. Yeah. So don't try to go after raccoon yourself, folks. If it's in your attic or roof area or whatever, they're very dangerous. In fact, several pest control commercial companies said, no, we don't do raccoons. Sorry. It's got to be smaller than, a bread box or something. Anybody have a bread box anymore? Potholes. There's a pothole number they'll give you to report a pothole somewhere, maybe in one of your local Dearborn streets. Public service day violations, which means vehicles in the streets. Sewer backups. There's business hours and after-hour number. Sidewalk problems of any sort. Snow removal or street cleaning needs. Street lights out. Traffic signals out. Trash recycling and yard waste questions. Water main breaks. Okay. So call Department of Public Information at 313-943-2285, and they'll give you the specific number of the people to call. And, 3 minutes to go. Oh, my goodness. I guess we'll just talk about climate change a little bit here today. Don't have time to feature it, but one of my news sources for national news, and sometimes Michigan news, commondreams.org. It's really excellent, commondreams.org. Progressive, yes, but we always want to move forward, don't we? And I found one last week. That is from a Buddhist monk and scholar about people's climate change, on changing directions before it's too late. So from the Buddhist point of view, we've got to do climate change, at least that Buddhist anyway. Secondly, the Catholic Climate Covenant, three C's there, it's catholicclimatecovenant.org, an official organization of the Catholic Church. They were celebrating the 48th annual Earth Day, of course, last week. And the Catholic Climate Covenant, that's a great tongue twister. They want to let you know that we've got to increase awareness of care for creation and climate change issues. So, and they even give you a quote or two from St. St. Pope Paul John II from his 1999 encyclical. He said, together, let us rise. And based on that undeniable science behind climate change, let us take action. Well, there you go. But locally, and that's always the spin here on the new WHFR Journal, Ann Arbor City Council is going to soon vote, this is according to MichiganRadio.org, on a major local climate funding. So if other people aren't going to do it, we got to do it locally. And cities can do it. Dearborn hasn't moved to this extent, but just listen to what Ann Arbor is doing. They're just finalizing a two-year operating budget. That's interesting. 2 years at once rather than just 1 year at a time. And they've got a great chance, apparently, to take a stand for climate action. The proposal has five new initiatives, one called Rain Ready Ann Arbor, an integrated climate adaptation program. Second one is Energy Smart Ann Arbor, an energy efficiency service. The third one is A2 Solar for All to expand renewable energy in the city. And fourth is Charge Up Ann Arbor, another program, and that's to spark the transition to cleaner transportation. They're doing a pretty good job already. And also A2 stands for Ann Arbor, you know, A squared. A2 Green Grants, a neighborhood grants program. They say if you care about what becomes of the community in the next 10 years or next 100 years, if you live in Ann Arbor, let your elected representatives know. And I would say if you like any of these programs, and by the way, it was Ecology Center in Ann Arbor that did this story, ecologycenter.org. They're a great, really statewide, but they're based in Ann Arbor, ecology group, work group, nonprofit. And maybe if you like some of these proposals, maybe you can get them introduced at the Dearborn City Council or some city council that you're a part of around here. Well, that's all we have time for now. Kitty Love is in the studio. Yes, she is. And she is sliding those CDs into our CD players now for you. And we're going to have the Best in the Blues coming right up. It is WHFR Dearborn that you're listening to. Thank you for listening to the WHFR Journal today. We'll be back again next week. And, we may be here because it's May, yes. For those that love indie rock, just a final plug here. Return to Vinyl, our indie rock benefit, WHFR benefit, at PJ's Lager House. Five bands, $10, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., 21 or over to enter. 1254 Michigan Avenue in Detroit. That's going to be a wild and crazy rockin' time, and it helps benefit WHFR and our support for local music. Here's Highway 61.